What's something that is seemingly not a big deal that can ruin your whole day?
Literally everything.
Hey everybody, welcome to Two Non-Doctors. I'm Liz Mealy.
I'm Maria Shahada. We are
We're
stand-up comedians.
stand-up comedians that are currently jobless because of the coronavirus.
We're finally going to be the doctors our mothers wanted us to be.
Is there anything that we don't know?
A lot, actually. We have a lot of questions. We have a lot of answers.
All of them wrong.
But we do have access to
Google.
and a vet.
Oh yeah, my mom's a vet. She knows some stuff. We have to do this
So every
again.
once in a while we're gonna invite her on. No, we don't. We're gonna actually use this. Welcome to Two
Non-Doctors.
Non-Doctors.
Hi! Welcome to Two Non-Doctors. I'm Liz Mealy.
I'm Maria Shahada.
I like really legit rolled out of bed. So like all I'm doing is like looking at my bags under
Yeah,
my
but
eyes.
we had to do this early because you're famous, so.
I still you can't you at least have to let me know you did a cat eye or something so I can at
Was
least
bored. It looked like shit all day. I was like, I'm throwing some makeup on. I'm bored.
yeah all right I'm not gonna do it all day. It's not like I'm gonna like later in the day be inspired. This is just what my face is gonna be like all day. I'm still on like an accomplishment high. It's funny because I haven't written it. Okay, so basically, I went and stayed in a hotel with a friend of mine from high school who's writing a book, and I'm writing a script. And I've had the script idea for over a year. And I've been like, I would like to say that I used the pandemic for research. I read books, I watched shows and movies, and I was collecting information. But I had neglected to do the part I needed to, which was to write the actual script. So then my friend was like, hey, I have to write this book and I need to just like focus. Do you want to do this writer's retreat? And I've actually, the woman that wrote an article about me in the New Yorker when I was 18, she's written a bunch of books. I read, I think, two of them, but we were friends and we would like meet up and she would be like, oh, I went on, I'd be like, oh, she'd be like, oh, I sorry to get back to you. I was on a writer's retreat. And I was like, it was the first, you know, when something gets in your head and you're like, I want to go on a writer's retreat.
Yeah,
Like,
all the time.
I want to go into the woods. And I just imagine it. I don't even know if she said this to me or I made it up, but I just always imagined she went into the woods where she didn't have any Wi-Fi and she wrote a book. Like, I assume that's what you need to focus. And then I wrote my book mostly during a pandemic, and that helped. The internet still existed, but not having anything to do really makes you focus.
Oh yeah. So wait, were you in a hotel or like what'd you do?
I was in a hotel, so it was in Providence, and yeah, we just got coffee every morning, wrote all day, then we would get like food and we'd eat it in the hotel room, and then we would write. And then I usually clocked out around 10. I found out I'm a morning worker because even she, like, she would be talking, she's like, "You seem busy." Like, I was like, "Yeah, I guess I'm just more focused in the morning." And then by 10 o'clock, I was like, "I'm done." And then she would write until like 1, 2 in the morning sometimes, and I was like, "Oh, I am not a 2 a.m. writer. I am a."
Wait, do you mean 10 p.m. or 10 a.m.?
10 p.m. Oh, yeah, that
Oh,
would be
okay.
really sad. No, I'm waking up at 9. Could you imagine? I just have one good hour every day. And I'm like, it's like almost like when,
That's me.
crap, when, but no, what is it when you only, because like I was in Australia, not Australia, Alaska, when they only had like 3 hours of daylight. So it really was like, you know, you had to like cherish the daylight. And that's almost how it feels with like concentration. You're just like, my concentration is fading.
Yeah.
If anything, I learned just like, all right, if you set your mind to something, I wrote 25 pages, is what I'm trying to say. Like,
Great.
I remember when I wrote my last script, I don't know how long it took me. It was also like one of my first scripts and I didn't know what I was doing, but like it definitely was months. And I wrote literally half this thing in 2 days because I focused. Guys,
Yeah,
focus.
that's great. I remember, I guess like a few weeks, like maybe a month ago, I finished a pilot. I started and finished a pilot in just a few weeks. And then I was like, oh, I don't have ADHD at all. Like, I don't need Adderall. I can just do this there. Gotta stop being lazy. That's the problem. Like, I was with a couple of comedians yesterday and they were talking about how, like, oh, I think I have ADHD. You know, like I sit down to write and I can't get started. And I'm like, doesn't everyone have that? Everyone has that. It's
Yeah.
really hard to get started, but once you get started, you like can you can focus in. But I just don't I don't think it's right to just go, oh, it's a problem with my brain, and then just stop and wait for the pills. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just in general, like the best example I can give, I think it really is about fear, the painfulness of writing. Even writers, like some of the biggest writers, will talk about the painfulness of writing. But then also, you don't know until you know. So like, I remember I was supposed to do my album recording, or I was supposed to put out an album. This was like 10 years ago, and it got ruined twice. And I was so frustrated, and I was just so crazy that I was like, fuck it. Maybe I wasn't meant to put out this hour. And I scrapped all my material, and I was like, I'll put out an album when I write a new hour. And it had taken me, you know, at that point, 10 years. And I would say the material that I was hoping to put out was like a compilation of like things that I had written in 5 years, 4 years, and then recently. So it was like 5 years worth of material. And it was kind of disjointed, but I was like, you know, it was jokes that did well. And then when I decided to scrap it and start new, I wrote a new hour in a year and a half. And I had never written an hour that fast before. And I don't think I've ever written that fast before, but everything felt, I felt connected to all the material. I was excited about it. It was like such a big change in my philosophy, to the point now that I keep myself on that schedule. Could I possibly do it faster? Maybe. But for the most part, it shouldn't take me more than a year and a half to write an hour. If yeah. I really focus myself and push myself to get as much stage time as I need and write as much as I need. And I keep myself on that schedule because of this like accidental bad situation. So almost the same way, I've always been like, all right, well, I have to do a lot this time. And it usually, because like before this, it would take me a couple of months to write a script. And this is, I'm also writing an hour drama as opposed to what I used to write, which was like a half hour kind of comedy. So it is different and I've had to do more research. But I was like, oh, if this was technically a comedy right now, I would have been done. Like 25 pages is like, you're almost done. You're pretty much done. So yeah. It's just like, oh, I could write a script in 2 days. Liz, you can write a script in 2 days.
That's the thing, is that I think like, because no one's like specifically asking, like, I need this by this time. Like if you were staffed yeah. in a writer's room, you'd bang these out every week. And, yeah. Or even before that, I imagine there'd be a bunch of rewrites and stuff, but
money is real motivation.
But you like, can do nobody's... it. It's not like, it's like, that's not possible. My brain will explode. Like you can do yeah. it. It's just that no one's asking. It's not urgent. So it's like, we talked about the quadrants before. So it's like important and not urgent. And nobody ever gets to those. You yeah. always do the yeah, yeah. important, urgent, or not important, not urgent, or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like those tasks. And it feels like, you know how, like when you have a purse and if you have like a little, like, what do you call those little, they're just like this big and you carry them when you go to the like club.
Clutch?
Yeah, clutch. And if you have one of those, you'll just bring the essentials. But if you have like a big fuck off bag, you'll fill it.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah. and that's with time with like, if you have all the time in the world, you will take that amount of time to write. If you don't have any time, you'll write it in that time.
Yeah. And I also think it's about labeling the time. Like, in general, I know that I'm going to do comedy at night, at least now that things are open up. So I've noticed that I've actually been a little bit more efficient with my time, because by 5, 6, I need to like shower and get ready so that my mornings and my afternoons shit gets done, as opposed mm-hmm. to during the pandemic, or even like when I was like in college, like I had all the time that, why do I have to get it done today? I could do it tomorrow or the next day or the day after that. I have so much time, as opposed to now I'm like, fuck, I go on the road in a day and I have to get this shit done before 7 and the post office yeah. closes. And
people always talk about like quitting their day job because it gets in the way of what they want to do, like their art. But it's like, no, it doesn't. Like every time no. you have a day job, you're able to like say, okay, that time's gone. What time do I have left?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always needed a little bit of a barrier to like push me.
We need some boundaries, creativity within boundaries.
I will say this though. So I think it helped having somebody else. Like I think, cause I'm going to be in a hotel by myself to do the road. And I'm curious how much I'm going to get done, because it did help that every time I wanted to like do something differently, I would like look over at Amanda and I'm like, oh, she's working. You know what I mean? And Amanda said the same thing. She was like, at one point I was going to tell you a story and then you looked so focused. And I was like, I'll save that story. She looks so focused.
My flatmate actually joins these like productivity things where you're, what's the word when you have to answer to somebody else?
A boss?
No, you have to answer to somebody else, but like you're whatever, they know about your time, that you know about their time, and you just have to work. Even if you're not in the same, total strangers, you're not in the same career field or whatever, yeah. but like, because you're like, I want to work on this for the next hour. And they're like, I'm working on this. And so you kind of make each other do it. I've not done it, but it sounds interesting.
No, I've done that. When I wrote my first script, when I was writing Declawed or Damaged, I think Damaged, I would meet up with my friend Corey and we would sit at a cafe and I would literally be like, what are you working on? He's like, I have to work on this. He's like, what are you working on? And then he would look up and he goes, how's it going? I was like, I'm on Facebook. And he's like, Liz. And I was like, I know. You know what I mean? It was like 10 years ago. I was like, I know. I'm logging off. It's fine.
Yeah.
But it does, like, I think visual accountability, I think that's why people work in coffee shops. But then I think also like what you're saying, which is like this kind of I think that's why like cubicles are a thing. Like everybody look like you can see that everybody looks like they're working. Yeah. Or if you see everybody goofing off, it's also like, why am I working? This is stupid.
Yeah. All right. You want to do announcements?
Yeah. Thank you to all our Patreons. All our patrons, you're wonderful. We appreciate you. Thank you. If you don't know, you can get early access to our episodes. You can get weekly bonuses. You can get monthly bonuses. You can get stickers. You can be a Google guest. You can control our Googles. You could get my cat book signed. There's so many different things that you can get. So you can join us at patreon.com/2nondoctors/doctors. And yeah, be a Patreon.
Yeah, join us on the socials. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at 2nondoctors, the number 2 full word doctors, and then on Instagram at 2nondrs. And if you have time to leave us a rate and a review on Apple Podcasts, that helps us a lot. It helps us get seen and it feeds our egos.
Yeah. And then personal stuff, buy my book. Everybody buy my book. But I'm starting to add more dates. So Brooklyn in June, Arlington in July with Maria, who's going to be with us in the Americas. I love that face. I looked up only to be like, you're welcome. You're welcome, America. And then I'm going to be in Cleveland at the end of July, Detroit early August, and Houston in September. And I'm slowly adding stuff. Fan mail?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. I like this fan mail. So Samantha on Instagram wrote to us and basically you had your Google about how do you decaffeinate coffee. And we basically discovered that it's like not great for you. Like it's just really like it's all chemicals and it's kind of shitty. And we were both kind of like turned off by that. Yeah. So Samantha on Instagram wrote to us and she says there's a totally safe chemical-free way to decaffeinate coffee. And it's called the Swiss water process. So I was like, okay. So then I use that as an opportunity to Google what is the Swiss water process. And basically they take green unroasted beans and they're immersed in like fresh water to open their pores. Then they are immersed in this green coffee extract, GCE, which the water contains coffee flavored compounds. Then the water pulls out the caffeine, but not the flavor since the water is already saturated with flavor molecules. And then the caffeine is captured in this carbon filter and the GCE is used to decaffeinate the next batch of coffee. It takes 10 hours and no chemicals are involved.
Do you know what? And that sounds like, exactly like a spa treatment. They go, they open your pores, they put in a green coffee extract, your tired eyes look less tired, and you're somehow detoxed.
Yeah, it was invented by a Swiss masseuse. I'm making this all up. It was invented by a Swiss masseuse named...
A Swissuse.
Swissuse, yeah.
Don't come up with a Swiss name. It'll just be racist.
Yeah, no. I was like, a Sergey? I was like, I got nothing.
Don't do it.
And then I was going with an S. I was just like, oh God. Thanks for bailing me out. But it's just so funny that like our fans were like, there is something. And then I researched it and I was like, that's a lot of work. I'll just take chemicals. That's like a lot, guys.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's done very often, but like, yeah, their whole thing is like, it's chemical free. But yeah, I got pretty freaked out as somebody that, I don't do decaffeinated coffee, but I do decaffeinated tea to find out that it's just shitty. Like it's the way they do it makes it shitty tea now.
You the decaffeinated green tea or regular?
I don't know if I like, but just in general.
Okay.
And they decaffeinate. That's what we learned from your Google. But yeah, I just you inspired us for more Googling. So I just wanted to thank you, Samantha, because I think we learned that there is a chemically free alternative. I'm sure it's expensive, and I'm sure it's at Whole Foods. I wonder if it has like Swiss, was it, what'd she call it again? Swiss water process. Like, I wonder if it has like a little emblem. Maybe
it's everything's like that. And what I found was just like the dramatic.
No, way. If you can do it the cheap, fast way, why would you do it the fancy Swiss way? Also, I think I read somewhere that it's not even in Swiss, like they do it in Canada. Like, it doesn't even happen in Switzerland.
Swisswater.com, lawbean.co.uk, Amazon. Here we go. Anyway, thank you, Samantha. That's
thanks, Samantha.
I'm gonna buy like 10 pounds of.
Yeah, we can't handle Googles. We're just like, we need to really figure this out. We should get into our Googles.
Yeah. Today we have a Patreon guest, very funny comedian based in London and a very good friend.
Also on the podcast.
Called Khalees Exists.
If you're missing the experience of being out in the public and seeing a guy screaming on your bus with shopping bags, then you can get that experience by listening to my podcast.
I really enjoy your rants. They're funny and a little bit like, I hope he's okay.
What did you Google this week, Khalees?
Bogus Victorian health cures. Ooh. Bogus Victorian health cures.
This actually goes really
quackery.
Really well with the episode.
Was there a reason you Googled this? Like, what inspired this Google?
I think it's partly because my mum subjected me as a kid to like a holistic bloke who tried to diagnose my IBS with a metal probe that looked like a dildo that he rubbed on my feet. And was like, okay, you're not allergic to lemons. Let's see what else is here. And it's just like, it was like, and at a time I was like, oh, okay. And then looking back, I was like, there is no way that thing worked. Some of the things I found, laxatives for chicken pox. Imagine what, you just shit out the spots? Is that the...
But how is that any different than like leeches? Like they would have leeches soak up or like soak up the bad blood. So it's just like, blood. I think they were just like, the same way that people are just like, just to cleanse yourself, just drink as much water. And you're like, I don't think I can just drink enough water. Yes, water is important, but I don't think you just flush everything out.
Yeah, I think people just think, oh, just get something out of your body and that will solve. Because they can see it leaving your body. It's like, well, that's probably the headache.
You're like, what if I drank and then vomited it out? Is that, does that work for chicken pox? That's because that's what I'm going to do.
Fun you can have with chicken pox is like, I'm gonna get so drunk that I projectilely vomit, and people are like, she's just really healthy.
Chloroform for hiccups, which I guess if you're unconscious you don't notice you have hiccups.
That's so funny. Logical sense to me. Yeah. Keep away your hiccups.
You could use chloroform to cure anything technically. Look, if you're asleep, you don't know that you've been shot two times in the chest. Yeah. So let's just...
Yeah.
I know how...
Because, like, how heavy is that knockout? You know what I mean? Like...
Pretty heavy to the fact they used to use it for early surgeries. It was what they used for, like,
really?
Anesthetic.
Really?
Not in the West, anyway. In China, they actually had stuff.
Do you think they can microdose chloroform? You know, like, just for the hiccups? Just a quick sniff, and then you're like, oh, I'm good.
It's actually how you take a power nap. Nobody really talks about that. You microdose chloroform, and you're just like, yeah, I just knocked out for 20 minutes, and then I was ready to work. Like, I was just on it.
I'm sure Shane will come up with, like, chloroform gummies. There's a gummy for everything. There'll be a chloroform gummy. Just chew this. I've also got inhaling smoke from asthma is a great one.
Oh.
It's counterintuitive at
best. Yeah, that is bad science.
I think that was someone who it was a doctor who knew someone who had asthma and hated them and spitefully was like, yeah, just breathe in smoke. I don't care. Just leave me alone. Stop coughing.
Here's a carton of cigarettes. Just have at it. No, this is exactly what you need.
And that one of my favorite is cold douches for insomnia, which is also the name of my advocacy group.
Okay. Cold douches.
Yeah.
Let's collect ourselves.
Let's take a step back.
Is that like, are you putting like an ice pop up there? Like, what is a cold douche?
Well, they wouldn't have had refrigerators, right? So I guess what, you put it outside for a bit?
Also, that's a real cup of coffee. Can I just say, like, talk about waking up. That is.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good point. It's surely the opposite. How are you going to sleep when you've just defiled yourself? Put this Mr. Frosty up your ass.
They're like, Khalees, why are you so alert at work? And you're like, are you excited about a project? And you're like, no, I'm cold douching.
This is going to be such a thing. And then there's going to be like cold douches with CBD oil, cold douches with adaptogens.
The one thing I did learn from these, though, is that when you take drugs now, you don't really know if they're working. Like, I'm on like you know, stuff for my mental health, and I don't know they're working until I'm off them. Until I'm a thing, it's not doing anything. And then I'm off them. And then, or this, like, it's like turning up the volume in your brain. You just start to go, bah, 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 and you're like, oh my God. But with all these Victorian health cures, like, you, if you took cocaine to solve a headache, or cocaine to solve alcoholism was one of them. Yes. Like, you know you're taking out cocaine. You know you're taking heroin to, I don't know, keep the ghosts away.
I loved these. These were awesome.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing them.
Thank you.
Well, check out Khalees's podcast, Khalees Exists.
Maria and Liz are both on episodes, so check those out first. And thanks for having me.
You want to go first?
Yeah, I Googled, will I be sore after every workout?
Oh, what inspired that?
I worked out, but I was, I saw a personal trainer and I was super fucking sore after for days. And it wasn't great because that was just the assessment.
Like, that's where they just try to see how strong you are.
Yeah.
And you were sore from a test.
Yeah. That's yeah. I mean, yeah, it wasn't even the full hour because half the time was spent like with like paperwork and asking me questions and what I was looking for and getting to know, you know, like, and then some of it was do a push-up, you know, and then I just like left like oh God, I was so wobbly. And it's been a while since I've properly worked out, like a year. And so being sore is to be expected, but I just thought, like, am I gonna get used to this? And if I get used to this, does this mean I'm not working out enough, like hard enough? Because you get sore because you're tanning the muscles, because you're pushing yourself further than what you're used to. So by that logic, it feels like you should be sore all the time because you should always be pushing yourself to the point that like you're not used to anymore. But I found out that it's actually, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, I do. I just, you would have to be using different muscles because eventually your muscles do train and get stronger. But like, if you're always doing an hour workout and you're always doing the same movements, eventually you're just maintaining.
Yeah. So like, it's like, how long do you maintain before you start pushing yourself further again? So,
I mean, that's a personal choice.
But that would have been a better Google than what I actually Googled. But so I found out that the balance is what you need. You know, you need to have like, you push yourself to soreness, but you build muscle and you get stronger. And so the workouts don't hurt as much anymore, because I don't want to hurt after every workout. So you do get used to them. But then eventually you should be pushing yourself more. So it's sort of that balance. It's sort of like when you're doing comedy and you're like, how long do I try old jokes to make them better versus like writing new jokes? You know, it's just kind of a balance.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because you don't want to be bombing all the time because you're always doing new stuff and never actually developing anything. But also you don't want to just be doing your old stuff all the time because then it's boring. It's like, you know how people are going to react. You know it works. Like,
yeah, but you could be improving the old stuff, but yes.
Yeah, of course. But at some point you've polished the joke and you're just doing a polished joke.
Yeah.
And at what point are you just bragging that, you know, you know, not bragging, but like, you know how it is where you're just like, I know this is going to work. And if it doesn't work, you're the problem. Not me.
Or in the case of Edinburgh, you do the joke over and over and over again, regardless that it doesn't work because you have to fill the hour.
Yeah, no, that's very logical. No, for me, when it comes to working out, like I used to run and like just hit my mile marks. And like, if I was sore, it's because there was hills in the way, you know what I mean? There was hills on this route, or I did further because I was getting ready for a marathon. Then I started doing CrossFit, and CrossFit, their whole thing is like muscle confusion. So you're always, every workout you're doing different stuff and you're pushing it to the nth degree. And I was always sore, but I kind of, because I was a gymnast growing up, soreness is kind of comforting to me. Like, don't get me wrong, there were some days where I was like, I hate this. Like, I'm a full rock and I can't move. And like, turning in my sleep wakes me up because I'm so sore. Oh, that doesn't feel good. The same way that like after a marathon, you can't like walk for 3 days, even when you train, or at least, you know, the way I train, which was clearly not effective enough. But yeah, but like being sore the next day or the next 2 days always reminded me that I did something and it felt good. But yeah, I also agree that like if every 2 days you're sore, it's like, well, this isn't the life to live either.
No.
Like, what are we doing?
I can't move. Like, yeah. I'm like, I feel like I'm 80.
But they've always said there should be a balance. Like, I've always known that in the sense that like you shouldn't be doing your hardest workout every day because then you don't let your body heal in any sense of it. And if your body doesn't heal, it actually can't make muscles. So a lot of times what they have to teach men is that if you're working out one every day and two to like exhaustion, you actually won't get stronger because you never allow your body to rest. So teaching people about rest days or taking easy days as a way to actually gain muscle is really important because we don't really teach people that. We just teach them like pain, no pain, no gain. And it's just like, well, no pain, no gain, but like also like no rest, no gain. You need a rest.
Yeah. Can I tell you like something that offended me when I was there? Cause she calls everything I consider to be exercise. She calls active resting. So, so walking, swimming, I think yoga is, I'm not sure if yoga, but you know, cycling, these are all forms of active rest. And it's like, what? This is like what this walking is, how I exercise.
I completely agree with that. I get that when it comes to like heart rate and stuff like that, but I was like, there are some yoga stuff where I was like, this is active resting. This
is
pretty much sleeping. I mean,
child's pose in a half for a half an hour. Right.
Yeah. Oh my God. But again, I think it's important. I think active, like, so even my mom with weightlifting, she has active rest periods and they're necessary for her to be strong enough to lift 3 days later or whatever. Like it's just so important to, and to have the mix, like you should be biking and weightlifting. You should there should be some combination of different formats because all of it is important. You know, you need to be strong enough for walking. You need to be strong enough for stairs. You need to be able to carry your groceries home. So the diversity of activities is what makes you capable of getting places and doing things.
Yeah.
But well, that's good. I liked your Google.
Thanks. What was yours?
Mine was based on a TikTok I saw that made me scared. That's what mine was based on.
You need to get off that website. You need to get off
that. I know. Okay. How do you find out if you have a parasite? Not the first time I've Googled this, by the way.
Not the first time you haven't had a parasite.
Yeah, no. It's also like I Googled all this and I was like, oh, I understand why I've Googled this previously. I think I Googled this like 10 years ago. You know when there's like symptoms for a medication or like everything is always like flu-like symptoms. You might have AIDS if you have flu-like symptoms. You might have the flu if you have flu-like symptoms. You might like flu-like symptoms is like such a an umbrella thing, and it could be like something that's not that big of a deal or something that's astronomically horrible. And that this description for parasites almost completely reads like IBS, and that's probably why I Googled it. But it's like this could be anything, and also you could get a parasite from anywhere. It was just horrific. So anyway, how do you find out if you have a parasite? First of all, how do you get a parasite? It could be from contaminated food or water, undercooked meat, contaminated fruits and vegetables. Then it's at the bottom of your foot. Don't know what that means. Is that stepping on a parasite? It was not clear at all. Actually caused some distress. okay. And then the 10 signs that you might have a parasite. And this is what I was talking about. Like, unexplained constipation, diarrhea, gas, bloating, nausea, and other symptoms of IBS. Right, that's all IBS. You traveled internationally, got diarrhea on your trip. You had food poisoning and your digestion has just not been the same since. You have trouble falling asleep or you wake up multiple times at night. Skin irritations or unexplained rashes, hives, rosacea, or eczema. You grind your teeth in your sleep. Painfully aching muscles and joints. Fatigue, exhaustion, mood changes, depression. You never feel satisfied or full after your meals, and you've been diagnosed with an iron deficiency anemia. When I was running marathons and I was clearly allergic to like yeast and a bunch of other stuff I didn't know, I had like all those symptoms. Like, it was just like, it's just so funny that I'm just like, if I like, no shit, I thought I, but like,
but didn't you have ringworm?
Ringworm is different.
It's not a parasite?
I don't know if it's a parasite, but it's not. Parasites like steal your nutrients. Mm. And like ringworm is not stealing your nutrients. I don't know what ringworm is considered, but that's not a parasite. I think I could be talking out of my ass. Are you Googling it so I don't
Good. Where it's a contagious fungal infection caused by common mold-like parasites that live on the cells in the outer layer of your skin.
So maybe parasite is like too broad of a word, because when I think of parasite, I think of the ones like, and I know this just because of like my parents, like your dog will have worms and they'll like worms will be coming out of their butt and stuff. Or like there's people that like they can't gain weight and then they find out they have this parasite that's been eating all their nutrients in their body. So like I don't think of just like a rash as being a parasite. I think of something that's like inside you stealing your nutrients as a parasite. But clearly this is a very rudimentary.
Oh my God, I can't.
Oh yeah, it's horrific. That's why like once you see like somebody's like, oh, this parasite came out of me, you're just like,
oh, sorry. It's just
And that's where the Google came from. It came from a fear that maybe I had somebody inside me living off my hopes and dreams. And I was like, not in this body.
You mean like a child? Not in this body.
That's literally my parents were watching, I guess either House is still on or they were watching old episodes of House. You know, but anyway, I was like, this is when I was home a couple weeks ago and the guy and the woman was like describing all her symptoms. He goes, oh, you have a parasite. And she was like, I haven't traveled. Where would I get a parasite? He's like, sweetheart, you're pregnant. That's why you're vomiting. That's why, you know what I mean? That's when you have a baby, they're taking your stuff, but it would have to be the Lord's baby at this point. So
yeah,
I could only be carrying a parasite right now.
Yeah.
Should I name it?
No, I don't think you have any parasites.
No, I don't have a parasite. I know I don't. And it's funny, I don't have a lot of IBS symptoms anymore, but I'm always in a constant state of how sick I was and like always wanting to be on top of it, if that makes sense, even when I don't have these symptoms.
Yeah.
So that was my Google. Hope nobody has a parasite.
Yeah. What's next? What do we do next?
Let's get personal. Yeah. Okay. Let's get personal. What's something that is seemingly not a big deal that can ruin your whole day?
Literally everything.
some light examples.
I tweeted once that I have to send a fax today and it's ruining my whole day.
That's a legit one, because you just want to be like, I remember this so clearly. I got a speeding ticket. I took 6 hours, like a 6 hour driving course, so that I didn't get points on my license. And so I still think I had to pay a fine, but I just was trying not to get points on my license because I had a little speeding problem. Did all the work, submitted everything. And then a month later, I'm about to leave the house and I get this notice that it was like, your license is going to be suspended. And I was like, what? So I call up the place and I go, why? I did my 6 hours. I did everything. They're like, I guess they didn't send the proper paperwork. They're like, but you can fax it. And we'll take care of it. And I was like running out the door. I was like, fax it. I was like, I can fax it in 4 days. I can email it in 3 seconds. Yeah. And I was being a cock. Turns out it was a judge. I was yelling at a judge. I had no idea. It was a small town that I got this ticket, but I want to be like, faxing? Who's faxing? What are we faxing for? No, this is not what it's about. Yeah. Makes me so angry. We have all this technology and you want me to fucking do 1994 technology? Fuck you.
Fuck you. Yeah. Suspecting that my flatmates have taken some of my anything, honey, cereal, coffee, milk, well, obviously whistling of any sort or gum chewing. Oh my God. So I was at my taping yesterday. One of the other comedians, like right before, the audience was live streamed. So they had the comedians sit as like 6 audience members. And right as we were about to start, one sitting one person away from me pulls out gum
and goes to everyone.
Yeah. Well, no, he didn't. But I mean, like, and I was like,
I was waiting for a nightmare to happen right now.
That has happened to me. And I took the gum away from my friend Nicole, because she was like, does anyone want any gum? And I went, no. Just took, but she had like two bags. I was like, I will give these to you at the end of the night. And she's like, are you fucking kidding me right now? And I'm like, you don't understand. It's dire. It's dire. So like, I'm like, there's no way I'm about to like get nervous for my set that I'm recording and have to sit through a taping for 2 hours that, cause we have to sit there and laugh and like be present. Yeah. You can't get up and walk away because there's a camera on us. And he, so I was like, I had to like explain real quick. I was like, hey, sorry, but that gum, he's like, do you want a piece? I was like, no. Do you mind not chewing it? And I was like, I just have this thing. It's misophonia. It's like, it sends me into a rage and I'll want to kill you. And so, and he was like, oh, so you don't, he was like, you don't want me to chew it during your set? I was like, no. But I didn't have, like, also not at all, ever.
Yeah,
so he doesn't chew it during my set, but then he puts it in his mouth like halfway through this taping, and I was like it was such a nightmare because I have to like have a happy like laughy look on my face,
and you're like
guys just chomping away like a dickhead, by the way, like and sorry, I don't think he's listening, no one listens, but like he was like, you know, just like sort of, like who's chews gum just sitting there like, you know, like just you're supposed to be watching and present in the show, like what are you chewing gum for, huh?
I wouldn't want a camera on me. Like every time a camera is like.
There's so many movies with gum chewing scenes that I just freak out about. Like I can't even watch Midnight Cowboy. The whole thing is him chewing gum. I had to turn it off.
Well, that's awful.
And why did also, I start this rant?
Oh, because any little thing that can ruin, like what's something that seems small that can literally ruin your day.
Yeah. There's a lot that'll ruin my day.
Yeah. Some of mine, my hair, if my hair just doesn't, especially if I took the time to like wash it, put product in it, blow dry it, and then it still like, fuck you. I did what I was supposed to do. Like, fuck you.
Why? So, yeah. Why is it so variable too? Yeah. I agree with you on that one.
That makes me insane because the reason I'm putting all this effort in is because I want it to look good because it clearly matters for this day. And then it looks like shit. And I was like, well, if it's going to look like shit, I could have had an hour of my life back. Like,
yeah.
Ugh. So my leaving the house, knowing my hair looks like shit, will like, I'll just be like walking down the street like someone broke up with me, like just like a mess. Missing, you know this, missing the train by a minute. Ugh. If I missed it by 3 minutes, I didn't know it came,
yeah,
or like it was like there was no way I was gonna get, I would have had to run for like half a mile. That doesn't bother me. But if like yesterday, I just missed it. Like I the doors were shutting as I was going down the thing. I was like, like, yeah. It was just like, I had to be like, and the next train came and it was funny. I thought I was going to be 10 minutes late meeting my friend who I needed to meet on time because then I had a spot, but then I ended up still being on time. But like in my mind, I was just like, I missed this. And luckily I'm meeting a friend for dinner and it's not a spot, but if this was for a spot, I could have missed my spot and you need to be better. And like, what it does is just like, it just sends me into a shame spiral of talking to myself.
Yeah.
And you know me, I set like 9 alarms to make sure I leave on time. So what happened? You know what I mean? Like, did I like high five somebody on the street? Like what happened that I lost that essential 3 seconds?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else, like what other small. Somebody, since I live on the first floor, people having, it's okay if you have a conversation outside our apartment door, but when someone has like their whole, like literally like they could be out to dinner or they, like something that is essentially a real catch up outside my window. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So like most people are like, oh, how's it going? Or, da, 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 or did you get my package? Or like, hey, what's going over there? Or, hey, I saw that. What's her face? Went to the hospital. I get that. But when somebody has a 45-minute conversation outside my window, What are we doing?
Dude, I had, when I was living in the room downstairs, so there were two men that had a conversation at 10 o'clock at night for like an hour. And I'm just like, just go somewhere else. Go home.
Oh, I almost want to be like, I'm sorry you don't like your family, but I have, at night, I can't sleep. But like, I remember the same thing. It was like 1 a.m. It was two guys. They were almost right outside my window. And, you know, it feels vulnerable to let people know, like I'm a woman right outside, but I literally was like, hey guys, it's 1 a.m. Like, could you just like move it to like there? And they're like, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
And then they just went like 4 feet.
Yeah.
And we have like, so there's so much space that they could go have their conversation. And they at least apologized and they weren't assholes about it. But I was just like, I don't know if I'm getting older, but it's like, it's 1 a.m. 20, yeah.
Whenever anyone in the house, when I'm taking a shower, washes dishes or turns on the water, or I don't think you deal with it at your place, but I'll lose all hot water and I'm just getting a blast of cold. And so I'll stay out of it. But when the hot water comes on, it like shoots out. And so then I could just get hit in the face.
Yeah.
Pisses me off.
A shower being unpleasant, like taking cold showers, that's a great one. We've talked about that before. A cold shower is just like, why? Why? It doesn't even like... It was so funny because we talked about the power of cold showers. I've definitely taken a cold shower and somebody's like, you look great. And I'm like, shut up. Like, just like, yeah, I'm trying to think of like using the wrong fork. I've done that. There's Adrian came over once, or like maybe Adrian was in my car and she had brought her dinner, and she forgot her fork in my car or something. And I was like, do you want this back? She's like, no, you can keep it. But her fork is huge. It's like, maybe I have tiny forks, but I hate it. I hate this fork. It doesn't fit with the other forks. It's so long. It's just like, I feel like it's like my mouth isn't that big. So I only use it to like mix my eggs, or like if I'm pushing something out in a pan, I don't use it but like what'll happen is I'll make my food. I'll sit down at my desk. Keep in mind, the kitchen is not that far. I'll sit down at my desk. I'll realize that I have the shitty fork, and I'll be so mad that I have to get up and go get a normal fork, or that I've used, I have to go wash, or I've tainted what is clearly a mixing fork and not a eating fork in my mind.
Yeah. One more I got. Beautiful day. Open the window. Within a minute, bee flies in. Fuck.
Did I ever tell you? So in my old apartment, we had a window. We had a window in the bathroom in the shower.
Yeah.
We had a window. So we had this window, and we would leave it open. Clearly it helps with like whatever. But I remember I was in a good mood. This has to be like 8 years ago. I was in a good mood. I'm washing my hair, whatever, whatever. And I opened my eyes after rinsing my hair, and there's a bee. Mm. And I was like, ugh. And I was like trying to like encourage it to leave, and it wouldn't. So then my entire shower is based on this bee, where I'm like, literally like trying to get the soap, and then I'm like, so crazy. And my whole, like, could have gotten out. There's so many different options, but I took like this extra long shower because all my movements were determined by this bee.
Yeah.
Very upsetting.
Were you using Bird's bees? Hey, all right. What's next?
All right, let's get into our topic. So our topic this week is vaccines, the invention of vaccines, the history of vaccines, just in general, how they changed our lives. Because I've also like read a bunch of articles that are like, okay, the same reason that we teach people history so that we don't repeat history. You know what I mean? Like, that's why we learn about the Holocaust. That's why, you know, it's like we learn about these atrocities and these horrible things that have happened so that we can identify them, but, you know, hopefully we don't repeat them. We should definitely be learning about vaccines, because all these anti-vaxxers, like, it's just insane. Like, everything about it is insane to me. But before I get into the history of it, I want to talk about like what I found fascinating about what's kind of changing and happening in our culture. So I'm in this hotel over the weekend, and they have signs everywhere on the elevators that are like, you know, two people max, unless you're part of like the same unit or same family. So I'm about to go downstairs. The elevator opens. It's two people. And I go, you know, we're all masked, but I'm like, hey, are you okay if I get in the elevator? And it's big enough that three people wouldn't be too bad. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're fully vaxxed. And I was like, oh, I'm half vaxxed. And then we get in. And I was like, oh, that's so funny. And it happened a couple of times where like you would ask and they'd be like, I'm fully vaxxed, or, you know, whatever. And I was like, wow. I was like, that idea of telling people your vaccination status as a form of communication, that might sound silly, but I find that so fascinating. This, like, besides the fact that like people are putting their vaccination cards and their vaccination stickers on the internet as like a way of being like, hey, you should do this and it's safe. And
I gotta tell you, I am so profoundly sick of seeing all of your fucking vaccination selfies. It just feels like everyone's getting their driver's license before me.
I get that. And also, I completely believe that, I mean, I know America's greedy. We're hogging them. You know what I mean? Like, there's a shortage in other countries because of us. Also, the reason it's so innately important to us is because we mismanaged it for a year. Like, it's this kind of like, we're doing a good job with the rollout, but like, it shouldn't have been this dire to begin with. Like, and I understand that even countries that did a good job also need the vaccine and also are dealing with upticks and blah, blah, blah. Like, this virus is difficult to handle. I think what's hard for me, so like, I was in Florida a couple of times the last year, and one of my friend's neighbors is an anti-vaxxer. And she's like, you know, she's like, I don't know what to do, but like, that's what it is. And I'm just like, I don't understand how you can have children, you know, he has a bunch of kids, how you can have children where all you want to do is protect them and make sure that they grow up healthy and okay. And then because of false information, a blog, a bunch of people that aren't doctors say that it might cause autism or there's all these other things that you would just, you know what I mean? Like, that's where I start to get upset. So what I wanted to do is just talk about the history of vaccines to kind of be like, you can't, like, you're forgetting the very recent past. So in general, like, the first vaccine was invented in 1796 in England, because this guy took like this lesion that was on a milkmaid's hand of cowpox and then inoculated an 8-year-old boy. So the fact that it's been around since 17, yeah, it sounds gross.
I'll be cringing throughout the history.
Yeah, no, that's valid. In general, like, there's vaccines that you have to get as a kid. There's vaccines you have to get to go to college. And then we all know there's vaccines to go to certain countries. Like, if you're going to go to like certain parts of Africa or whatever, you might have to get like the malaria, like maybe not malaria. I forget. There's a couple of vaccines you're supposed to get. That one I didn't look up. But kids, there's the DTaP, which is, I don't know how to say half this stuff. Diphtheria.
Do you have a scar on your skin from getting vaccines when you were a child?
Scar?
Yeah.
No, my mom does though.
Like, yeah, Helen and I both do.
You do? You have a scar?
It's just like a small little divot, but yeah, we both have one. They're similar.
Yeah, my mom has like a big ass one on her arm.
Ah, wow.
I forget which one that's from, but as a dyslexic, I have to look at this, like, diphtheria, tetanus, and then pertussis, pertussis. Then there's hepatitis B, measles, mumps, and rubella. That's the MMR, polio vaccine. And then the newer one, the one that we probably didn't get, is the chickenpox one, the Varicella.
You didn't get a chickenpox vaccine? Maybe no, I didn't either.
I just got the chickenpox twice.
Oh yeah,
actually.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. We got old school.
Yeah, we did old school. So I got chickenpox. And then my mom got chickenpox while she was pregnant with Emily.
Damn.
And I got chickenpox again.
Oh no, you're only supposed to be able to get it once.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you don't get it, or if you did get it, you get shingles. I forget how that works.
Oh my God.
And then college, you have to get the bacterial meningitis. You may have to make sure that you have the DTaP if you didn't. HPV, which I got the HPV vaccine when I was 26. I think you could get it for free, or your insurance covered it before 27. I think it was something like that. Mm-hmm. But I ended up getting our friend Kyle, she has a bunch of kids, and now kids get the HPV, and both guys and girls, because guys are the ones that are giving HPV without even knowing it. And then it's women getting pap smears and finding out that they have HPV. So now the HPV vaccine, they give that to kids to prevent HPV from happening. And then the flu vaccine.
Why do they not give it to people over 27? Is it because they think that they should be in a relationship by then? Or is it because it doesn't work in your body if you're old?
I don't think science shames you like that.
I don't know.
You should be married. No, I think it has to do with your immune system, but I'm actually not sure.
Okay.
I actually don't know the answer to.
I'm going to look it up while you're.
Yeah, I think that's good. Okay. So measles, when the measles outbreak was out, 33 out of 100K would experience actual measles ended up with either mental retardation or central nervous system damage, in addition to those that died. Like, that's how serious measles were. Yeah. And measles was like eradicated, and then because of anti-vaxxers has come back. In the early 60s, there was a rubella outbreak that resulted in 20,000 kids being born with brain damage, including autism and congenital abnormalities. Okay, smallpox in the 70s, many survivors were blind, maimed, or had brain damage. Now, what's interesting is like dysteria, diphtheria, that's how it's said. Diphtheria, which, you know, even now, doctors now have never experienced it because it's been pretty much eradicated. But in the early 1940s, it like terrorized children in the sense that it killed more than 3,000 kids in the mid 1930s. And among some of the symptoms were that it would produce gray membrane of dead cells in the throat, and that it would basically block kids' windpipes and they would suffocate to death.
Oh my God.
So it's like, this is the kind of stuff that like, when they're just like, well, I'm not going to get my child the measles vaccine, and you're just because of autism, but you're like, yeah, but the result is also autism. You know what I mean? Like the result is also brain damage and autism. Like, it's just like this illogical kind of thing. There was a falsely linked link between the MMR vaccine, which is the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, and autism. The paper was retracted, and the author, the doctor, lost his medical degree. So his name was Andrew Wakefield, based in Britain. He's a British doctor. The study was on 12 people, and he fudged the data. And it's been over and over and over debunked, his findings. And it just doesn't matter. Like, it's just, talk about a rumor that you can't contain. So I think for me, it's like understanding how vaccines work, understanding how they've changed society, and really understanding how there's so much less childhood death and so much less childhood issues because of them. Did you look up, what were you looking up again?
Yeah, why you can't get it after 26. And the answers are, you just can't.
Oh, helpful internet.
It's just that, like, it's just ineffective after you get older. It works best if you get it when you're 12, 13 years old.
It must be like a immune response, like just how your body responds to it.
Yeah. And I think by the time, like, you're a little bit older, you've probably come in contact with some sort of virus of the nature. So
yeah. You know, so with HPV, there's like technically hundreds of them, and this vaccine covers like the top seven, something like that.
Right.
Okay. So basically how vaccines work, they teach your body to recognize and fight off potential harmful diseases, usually given by injection, but can also be given by the mouth. And basically you're given like a small amount of a weakened or dead virus or bacteria, also known as a pathogen, into the body. The body recognizes these pathogens as foreign invaders, responds by creating antibodies. And because these pathogens
mm-hmm.
in the vaccine are weakened or dead, they won't hurt you. But now the antibodies that your body has developed can fight the infection when you do come in contact with it. So it's like training. Like you know what I mean? You're basically training for a big fight. And if you do all the training beforehand, you make these antibodies, when you come in contact with it, you're capable of fighting it off. But if your body has never seen it, has never done any of this kind of training, you don't know what could happen. You could be lucky, just like some people have gotten COVID and they've had mild symptoms, or you could be somebody that, you know, comes in contact with it and has severe symptoms, dies, you know, what have you. So, but basically you're giving your body a heads up, and by giving them a heads up, they develop these antibodies, and then you can fight it off. And you
won't. Picture it's like tempering, like if you put soy milk in coffee, it'll curdle. Yeah. But if you put soy milk and then add coffee slowly, it's the same with eggs. When you're adding eggs to hot water, you temper it, and then it doesn't curdle. So it's just tempering your body, a body's immune system to deal with.
I love that.
Virus.
I think that's how we need to explain it to people. Guys, you don't want curdled soy milk in your coffee.
Exactly.
So get a vaccine.
Yeah.
Get a vaccine. And people are like, wait, what?
What? Your curdled soy milk will curdle other people's soy milk. I just want to, you have to do it.
Yeah. You're ruining my coffee. I'm screaming at people.
What are they talking about?
But you know, everybody is kind of talking about herd immunity with COVID, herd immunity. Well, what is herd immunity? Herd immunity is the sense, because not everybody can get a vaccine. So like, think of like, so every child gets these certain vaccines. And the reason that's important is some kids can't get them. If they had leukemia, if for whatever reason they have other suppressed immune system, I think babies under 6 months can't get any of these vaccines. So there's certain, and then of course there might be super old people that their body can't handle even a weakened or dead version of the virus. So there's people that can't even handle the vaccine, that cannot get it, and they depend on herd immunity. So by every kid in your school getting the vaccines, with one kid that used to have leukemia or whatever not being able to get it, they'll be fine. So everything that this is for the community.
I actually like, don't understand that at all. How is that one kid fine if everyone else is immune to it?
So you're not, okay, and I could be butchering this, and God help us. by God, I mean our fans, help us. From what I understand, let's just make it 100 kids. 100 kids, this is your community. It's 100 children, and one of them can't get the vaccine, everybody else. It can't spread, so therefore it doesn't end up getting to them. That's how I see it. So if I'm vaccinated and you're vaccinated, and we'll call her Samantha. Samantha isn't vaccinated. I think if we're in a room and the virus comes to me, it can't stick to me. You know what I mean? I'm not going to pass it on. And because I'm not passing it on to you, it doesn't travel. So by the time it could have gotten to a Samantha, it never gets there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, a little bit.
So the same idea with the herd immunity for COVID, if we get up to 80% of people, it just means it's going to spread a lot slower, because if I have the vaccine and you have the vaccine and my roommates have the vaccine and my neighbors have the vaccine, if I come in contact with COVID, it's not going to spread in my community, because it can't go to my roommates, and then it can't go to my neighbors, and it just dies in place, so that the person down the street that doesn't have the vaccine, it never even reaches them.
There's
so
no by excuse me getting, not to get it.
It's not, yeah, of course. And we 80% of people have to get it, but only the people that can't get it should not get it. Not the people, it really shouldn't be a freedom of choice when the benefits outweigh the con. Like, you're literally saving yourself, you're saving your children, you're saving your neighbors, you're saving the world by being able to do this. And it's, I think what's so upsetting about what's going on is that people don't understand that I'm not going to get it because it's not going to affect me kind of thing is like, but it affects everyone. Like, even if you don't get affected, it could affect your parents, it could affect your children, it could affect your children's friends, it could affect your children's friends' parents, it could affect the teacher. Like, there's rules, like you stop at a stop sign, you stop at a traffic light, and then there's courtesies. Do you understand? Like, you let people pass when you don't really know what you're supposed to do or whatever. And that's how society works. So there's rules that for your kids to go to school, they have to have those vaccines. Those are stop signs. You have to do that, or your kid can't go to school. Or I actually don't know what happens if you don't vaccinate your kids, especially with more and more, because your kids also have to go to school. That's a rule too. So it's like a little like, what happens? But there's also just courtesies. And I feel like America specifically, you see the selfishness, you see the lack of courtesies, you see the this is mine, or I don't want this, or I'm not doing this. And you're just like, there's no bigger picture. And then again, I think by knowing the history of how these vaccines have saved us so much pain and death and suffering, you've already had these vaccines. Like, you've already, it's like somebody saving you and then not wanting them to save anybody else. Like, you know, like that kind of feminist thing where they're just like, you know, this person built a ladder so that I could rise up. And then I took that ladder and I made sure nobody else could rise up behind me. Like like, cause there's all these like fucking asshole.
It's way like every comedian here who has immigrant parents talk about how they got in to, they became British citizens and they were like, right, that's it. No more. Shut the doors.
Exactly. There's some of these high powered women that are like talking about how like feminism is bad. I'm like, the reason you're talking to a group of people is because of feminism. Like, are you insane? Like, and that's where you're just like, cool. I don't know. There's a part, like, I would love a bigger discussion. I would love, especially if anybody remembers, like, I'm sure we have older fans that remembers some of these diseases taking over and hurting people. But I think the biggest thing is we live in such a cushy society that vaccines have got us to a place where just maybe autism, that's not nearly as bad as what has killed kids, has scared people into not getting vaccines. It's just insane. We could go on and on, but we would love to hear from you. Like I said, we would love to hear from some of maybe our older fans that can talk about some of their experiences that before, you know, certain vaccines were readily available. I'm open to hearing about people that are vaccine hesitant, because I think you should have an open conversation about it. I don't know. I really
write to us at 2nondoctors. That's the number 2 forward doctors@gmail.com. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks, Maria. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Not in this body.